Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
400 years ago today, on November 11th, 1620, the Mayflower anchored in what is today Provincetown Harbor. Some of this year's formal celebrations are seeking to put the native tribes and nations that those settlers encountered and displaced at the center of the story after centuries of marginalization. Today, we want to do the same by engaging with the history and present day of the Wampanoag people. We turn to Hartman Dietz. He is a member of and cultural resource monitor for the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe and an activist and historian. Hartman, so glad to have you. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thanks for having me, Tiziana.
So help us paint a clearer picture of our collective history. What was life like in these parts 400 years ago?
Well, it's funny because you say collective history and then what was life like? Because, there's this separation of the myth and the fact, and we have this shared history of a myth, but there's the fact of life. For thousands of Wampanoag people and other Donland tribes of people, Pequot and Abenaki, Mi'kmaq folks, was that life was a vibrant thing for folks, a society where people had trade networks and economies, people had trade agreements, people had their garden where they were attending to their farms, their kinship relations that they had to keep up, economic alliances, political alliances, war, strife, all the different things that are happening in any human civilization. And these things were all happening through the thousands and thousands of lives of people that lived here on a daily basis. And when the Mayflower landed, they were 50 souls amongst thousands that some people knew about and many other people may not have even understood that it was happening. We're unaware of that this boat had landed on the coast. So this is a part of what we would see of, the truth of society then. It was a very fate-changing moment for us, but not necessarily everybody was aware of the magnitude of what was going on.
Hartman, you talk about the vibrant trade networks, the economies. Let's talk about governance. So often the Mayflower Compact is looked at as this early founding document, helped create this new nation. It's central to this idea of self-governance as we think about it now. But people here had already been self-governing for thousands of years, had they not?
Oh, absolutely. The idea of self-governance was deeply seated in the principles of how people govern themselves and how people elected leadership in Native societies. And leadership was elected. Leadership was chosen by the people. And this is a concept that was relatively new in the monarchy system of European people. But for Native people, these concepts were age old and just a part of life. The sovereignty of one community to be able to make the decisions for themselves versus making decisions for the village across the valley or across the river, it didn't exist. While there was districts where larger decisions were made and people might go to settle disputes between two villages when they might not be able to come to agreement, so there's this setup where there's larger districts within the nations that might have figureheads that were more endowed with more power. They were all still elected by systems of clan mothers and different members of the communities that gave their power over to them by giving them their support.
It really is striking that you're talking about a history of elections on what we now call American soil for centuries prior to 1620, prior to when the settlers from Europe began to set up such systems here.
Well, it wasn't exactly elections. We had a word that was coming from our language, caucus. And it's something that you see in the primary still of many states. Where people actually physically stand behind the leader that they support and the message that they're supporting. So we would have these lengthy debate sessions where people would be chosen to lead and sometimes lead for just a very short period of time for a particular matter. But these debates would go on and people would shift until there was an obvious overwhelming support for one candidate, for one choice of leader or another, where there didn't need to be a count. Like we just saw with this recent election, you know, so many of these decisions were made on just a few margins, you know, very close races in many places. If the races were that close, if the decisions were that close, there wasn't a clear winner, because you had to have an overwhelming support of the people or reached a consensus where you might have 70-80% of people backing one idea, one spokesperson. So this wasn't a simple majority rule. It was consensus rule, which is very different. And I think it's a better thing. You have to work harder to achieve it. But I think that the results are better than the simple majority rule where 51% wins.
We're talking with Hartman Dietz, a member of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe and a cultural resource monitor and historian for the tribe. Let's go to the Mayflower moment. 1620, the Mayflower docks off Provincetown Harbor. It wasn't the first, wasn't the last ship of European origin to come here. But what was different? There was something different. I know that you've talked about this before.
Yeah, certainly. It was. They say that at the point when the Mayflower dropped anchor in Provincetown, it was not uncommon at any point in time to find nearly 200 ships between Jamestown, Virginia, and the coast of Maine. So the European ships had become very common up and down the coast, stopping, trading, sometimes taking captives and slaves, which certainly wasn't a part of what we appreciated and not a part of what earned them good reputation. In fact, quite the opposite. But you know, some folks would come and do trade. Some folks would come ashore and harvest resources. But they would move on. And these were largely vessels that were full of sailors and seamen. And what the Mayflower had that was different is had people that were unpacking their possessions, making a place to stay and live. They had women and children amongst them, families. Mm-hmm. They weren't here to trade and move on. They were here to make a new lives for themselves. And that was very different from anything that we had seen before.
What was the reaction?
Well, the reaction was cautious. When they landed out in Nauset, they were attacked because the folks out in Nauset had seen these slavers before and had been victims of the slavers. So that bad reputation I'd spoken of had really shaped their opinion of European vessels of all sorts. So they were attacked, you know, within the first landfall of when they first made landfall out in the Outer Cape. And that's part of why they came into Plymouth Harbor, was because of the hostility that they found out there. But when they came into Plymouth Harbor, a lot of the folks that had been there had passed on. So many folks that had passed on from the sickness that they said that bones were sitting above the soil to be, bleached by the sun and no one to bury them.
Can you clarify what you mean by the sickness, Hartman? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I get the sense this is important.
Just like we're seeing the COVID-19 now, 400 years ago, we also saw a sickness that came up the coast and wiped out whole villages at a time. And this had a really big impact on our society, the fabric of our society, much like, you know, think about Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina and how this whole society fractures and has to rebuild again from this monumental event. And it was a similar thing for us here as Wampanoag people to have to rebuild society after this plague had wiped out so many of our people. So we were in the midst of this catastrophe. And these folks showed up in a vacant part of our homeland where the village had been wiped out. And so some folks may have been watching closely from a distance, and they started trying to decide to figure out what their purpose, what their aim was here, what their ambition was. And we found people that could speak English, some folks that had been taken as slaves and brought back to go in and try to find out what they intended to do and how long they intended to be here. And when we found out that they intended to stay and make a life for themselves, we wanted to have certain agreements in place from them that allowed them to stay here in our nation, in our homeland, and agreements that they were willing to make, although weren't necessarily followed for very long.
So I'd like to, there's so much more that we could discuss about the history, but I want to make sure to leave time for the tribe today, too. It's 2020. As you noted, we have another global pandemic. We're in an economic downturn, political unrest. We are reckoning with systemic racism and our nation's history. How should we be thinking about the legacy of the Mayflower today?
You know, the Mayflower is you know, something that's, we've taught a mythology around the Mayflower, and it doesn't always reflect the truth of the history of the lives of these people. A lot of these people were seeking to restart a life. A lot of them thought they were going to be landing in Jamestown. I think that the economic incentive of the financiers who sent the boat across the water had other ideas in mind. They had reserved rights for this area for colonization from the crown. So it's not surprising that somehow they found people that were, they were going to drop off there, even if they didn't suspect as much when they got on board the boat across the ocean. But these folks and the history and the lives and the complexities that they brought are not necessarily reflected in the myth. And the myth is really put in place to create a justification for the foundation of white supremacy in this nation. And this isn't the truth and the fact of the people who came here. They didn't come here to create this erasure of indigenous people or a justification by which, by transfer of one place to live for 50 people, that gave permit for the taking of an entire continent and the removal of an entire people, which is oftentimes what the mythology is alluding to, that we are now supposed to disappear in the presence of a superior people. And, you know, these myths don't serve to help unite humanity. They don't serve to really make us as a nation able to achieve our best, because our best is not that one people have everything to offer and everyone else should be subservient, but that we all have something to offer and everybody has something that makes us all better. So hopefully we can look at this myth and this telling and realize that the truth of what happened is that there's a people who made room for strangers amongst their land, because we are all truly human beings, and we all have these same human needs. And if we can learn to get along and agree with each other and respect the boundaries and the truths of the law of the land, then we can do all right.
Hartman, I'm going to have to stop you there.
Okay, well.
I'm sorry, but I love that we can do all right. Hartman Dietz is a member of the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe, a cultural resource monitor for the tribe, an activist and a historian. I really appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me, Tatiana.